my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touched down in the land of the Delta Blues in the middle of a pouring rain. W.C. Handy, won't you look down over me? 'Cause I've got a first class ticket and I'm blue as a boy can be.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin taxpayers are picking up the tab for health care when it comes to Walmart employees. According to a recent report by the Capital Times, 3,766 employees, spouses, and children are receiving health insurance from the state. The nation's largest employer has more than 25,000 employees in Wisconsin who average just over $10 per hour. The annual cost to taxpayers who are picking up the health care bill, $4.75 million. The story echoes a report released by UC Berkeley in August that found California taxpayers paid more than $86 million to cover Walmart employees enrolled in the state's health insurance and other social programs.
UAW workers, more than 600 of them, walked off their jobs Wednesday at four CNH Global NV plants in Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. The workers are striking because they have no contract after the company put up a final offer demanding concessions. A six-year contract ran out in May, and the UAW has been unable to reach an agreement on a new contract with CNH Global NV. 350 of the striking workers are in Racine, Wisconsin, 225 in Burlington, Iowa. The rest are in Minnesota and Illinois. The company makes tractors and backhoes and similar farm and construction equipment. UAW recommended a no vote on the company's final contract offer, saying the offer takes back 40 years' worth of gains in areas like health care costs and new higher wages. The company says that workers gave notice around 10 a.m., walked off their jobs around noon on Wednesday, and workers are picketing around the clock at those four plants.
If the House of Mouse doesn't come up with an extra slice of cheese, Mickey may be walking off the job. For the first time since the early 80s, workers at Disney World Resorts are considering a strike. According to the Services Trade Council, a group of six unions that represent more than 40% of the resort's workers, Disney executives are refusing to propose a reasonable offer for pay raises and health and retirement benefits. Disney says that the offers that have been made so far are fair and competitive. The two sides have been trying to negotiate for nearly 8 months. Union members are expected to vote down a recent proposal, and if so, the council believes that would give them the authority to call for a strike in a Magic Kingdom.
Union households accounted for 27 million voters this year, and 68% of those union voters cast their ballots for John Kerry in the battleground states. That's according to an independent election survey and exit polling done by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. Here's today's Dow Bob report. More than 5,500 workers were killed on the job in 2003, a total of 5,559 were officially recorded. That's an increase over workplace fatalities in 2002. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there were four deaths for every 100,000 workers. The three most common causes of workplace deaths are highway accidents, homicides, and falls. The census of fatal occupational injuries has been conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1992. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Is there no uptick in the economy to bring us cheer? Wages are stagnant, jobs are down, stock prices are in the ditch, corporate profits are sliding. But wait, here it is. Just when you thought nothing was on the rise, here's an economic indicator soaring up, up, and away. It's the pay of CEOs. Even if a company's stock plummets, its workers are fired, and its accountants are under federal investigation for cooking the books and looting the pension fund, the boss hog is still wallowing in the big bucks, now taking an average of more than $11 million a year in personal pay. Well, the boss's oink, we deserve it. Besides, we're just being paid what the market will bear. It's how capitalism works, so get over it. But hold it right there, bucko. Doesn't capitalism now operate in a global market? Haven't you been telling us that you don't have to pay fair wages to American workers because you can roam the global labor market and get workers for, say, 13 cents an hour in China, or even import skilled software engineers from, say, India to work for a third of the pay of U.S. workers? Yes, you have. So here's my plan. Let's import CEOs. We can get them a whole lot cheaper from abroad, and get good ones, too. Did you know that the top bosses of major corporations in Europe, Japan, Latin America, and elsewhere are delighted to do CEO work for only $1 million or $2 million a year? American corporate bosses now are hauling away about 500 times the pay of a typical worker in their corporations. Not exactly a plus for company morale. But the ethic in other countries is much more fair. Bosses in Mexico, for example, are paid only 45 times what the typical worker makes. In England, it's 25 times. In Japan, it's only 10 times. This is Jim Hightower saying, so come on, you boards of directors, start thinking out of the box and applying a little global competition to the executive suite. Isn't that how capitalism works?
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
This is great. In keeping with the new theocracy that W is expected to proclaim any minute, Jerry Falwell is waiting anxiously in our chat room, which you can get to by going to TomHartman.com. Folks are using thee and thou as the new way of addressing each other. I love it. Welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org and CableRadioNetwork.com. Welcome back to our program. It's Friday. Typically on Friday, the first hour of our program is Brunch with Bernie, our regular session with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie is not available today. I'm not sure exactly why. I think he may be taking a much-deserved vacation, but we got a note from his staff saying that he wasn't going to be available. But he will, of course, be back next week. In the meantime, of course, you know, we've got a regular show to do and lots of interesting things to talk about. But also I wanted to just give you a little heads up on what's going to be happening throughout the day. At the bottom of this hour, in 30 minutes, we're going to have David Kubiak on. Elliot Spitzer has just announced a criminal inquiry into 9/11. And you may think that this was a done deal. You know, all the questions were answered, not even close. And this is not... We're not talking conspiracy nut stuff here. We're talking the Attorney General for the state of New York looking into questions that have not been adequately answered to his satisfaction. And David is one of the real experts on this. We're going to have him on. And then in our second hour, we're going to have on Anthony Polina, who is a talk show host in Vermont, who is formerly ran for governor of Vermont and also last year for lieutenant governor of Vermont on the progressive ticket. And the reason I want to get into this with Anthony is because the progressives in Vermont are actually picking up rural areas. The Progressive Party in Vermont in this last election picked up several House of Representatives seats in rural areas. Why is it that in Vermont, the rural areas are going progressive, whereas in Michigan, for example, or Indiana or Ohio, the rural areas are going conservative? What makes that difference? What are the progressives doing right? And what lessons can we all learn from that? We're going to ask Anthony Polina that. In the meantime, we've got just a pile of information and interesting things. One of the first, I think, and one of the most fascinating, and by the way, if you'd like to call in, of course, our number, 1-866-889-8894. On Monday, we're going to have somebody on from the National Abortion Rights League to talk about partial birth abortion. I want to get my facts straight on this, frankly. I'm not sure that I know all the details. And we had a discussion about it on the air the day before yesterday, and I just want to clean that up. Want to make sure that we get the right information out. Since this is clearly, this whole abortion issue is clearly going to be at the top of the schedule from the Supreme Court schedule, as new justices are appointed, and George Bush has made it known that he will not appoint a justice who would pass the infamous Dred Scott decision again. That, of course, being code language for the anti-abortion movement for Roe v. Wade. Dred Scott denied rights to African Americans. Roe v. Wade, in the mind of the anti-abortion folks, denied rights to unborn children, to use their language. Or other people would say, you know, gave rights to six cells in utero, depending on how you want to parse that argument. And frankly, there's some legitimacy on both sides of the argument. So we'll get into that on Monday. But interestingly, Dick Morris, the conservative commentator for Fox News, he was working in the Clinton administration, you'll remember, and got involved in a rather substantial sex scandal that, as I recall, involved a prostitute. I may be wrong on the details, but there was this sex scandal, and so suddenly Dick Morris became a Republican. And he's now a big shot at Fox News. And he published an article in The Hill. The Hill is the insider newspaper published in Washington, D.C., that every member of Congress, the House and the Senate, reads. It is the thing that you have to read if you're in politics. And Dick Morris, here's the right wing spin, the right wing conspiracy theories. I'm sure, you know, you've heard the left wing conspiracy theories about the election that just happened. I find this fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I think it's something that we all should take to heart and consider. I just want to share with you a couple of clips here from Dick Morris, from this self-admitted rabid right-wing conservative. He says, the title of it, of course, "Those faulty exit polls were sabotage." You say, what? Yeah, I mentioned I was trying to get a clip at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was doing election, 12:20 in the morning. I was doing election returns over at WDEV in Vermont, in central Vermont, one of the stations that carries this program. And the AP story came down that Karen Hughes had just sat President Bush down to tell him that the exit polls, or that earlier in the day, Karen Hughes had sat President Bush down to tell him that the exit polls in Florida were showing that they'd lost Florida, and pretty clearly that they'd lost Ohio. And so he was ready for the loss, and that he took it stoically. And I haven't gotten that clip yet. I will hopefully we're trying to get it clipped out of the program logs probably next week. I can play it for you. But here's Dick Morris on this. "By now it is well known and a part of the 2004 election lore how the exit polls by the major television networks were wrong." He goes on to say, "Exit polls are almost never wrong. They eliminate the two major potential fallacies in survey research by correctly separating actual voters from those who pretend they will cast ballots but never do, and by substituting actual observation for guesswork in judging the relative turnout of different parts of the state. So reliable are the surveys that actually tap voters as they leave the polling places, that they're used as guides to the relative honesty of elections in third world countries. Dick Morris speaking in the Hill today. When I worked on Vincente's Fox campaign in Mexico, he says, for example, I was so fearful that the governing PRI would steal the election that I had the campaign commission two U.S. firms to conduct exit polls to be released immediately after the polls closed to foreclose the possibility of finagling with the returns. When the polls announced a 7-point Fox victory, mobs thronged the streets in a joyous celebration within minutes that made fraud in the actual counting impossible. Now, this, you know, from Fox News commentator Dick Morris saying, you know, what's up with this? And then he goes on to say, but this Tuesday, the networks did get the exit polls wrong. Not just some of them. They got all of the Bush states wrong. So according to ABC TV's exit polls, for example, Kerry was slated to carry Florida, Ohio, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, and Iowa, all of which Bush carried on electronic voting machines. The only swing state the network had going to Bush was West Virginia, which the president won by 10 points. He wraps his op-ed piece up by saying, this was no mere mistake. Exit polls cannot be as wrong across the board as they were on election night. I suspect foul play. Now, isn't this fascinating? The conservatives are saying, you know, the exit polls all showed that John Kerry won, and won big, won in a landslide. But the actual vote tallies that came out of the computerized voting machine show that George Bush won. So according to the conspiracy theory of Dick Morris, somebody in the liberal media was rigging the exit polls. Interesting. Now, at the same time, I posted this on our website. If you go to TomHartmann.com and click on Message Board, the chat room will take you into the live chat room where you can participate, hosted on CompuServe. But if you go to the Message Board and where you can post messages, there's tens of thousands of messages posted there. And you go to the election area. It should be one of the top stories because I just posted it an hour and a half ago, the website for this. The surprising pattern of Florida's election results. And what they found, interestingly, was that on the touch voting machines, the touch screen voting machines, that things seemed to be fairly kosher. But on the optical scan machines, which interestingly are similar to the ones we use here in Vermont, which are also computers that have to be programmed. In other words, you have to program an optical scan machine so that when it reads the card, it thinks, okay, that third little black circle down in the first row means John Kerry. The fourth black circle means George Bush, for example, whatever. So you have to program those things. That in most of the small counties in Florida, the vote got reversed. For example, in Baker County, where there are 2,400 Republicans registered to vote and 6,800 Democrats registered to vote, in that county, the optical scan machine showed, again, keep in mind, 2,000 Republicans registered, 6,000 Democrats registered. It showed that there were only 2,000 Democratic votes for John Kerry and 7,738 votes for George Bush. And you go through the list, and they've got the whole list here. It runs five pages long of every county from Aluchawa to Washington. And every one of the smaller counties, you see this flipping, this very interesting reversal. It's just absolutely fascinating. In Liberty County, for example, 237 registered Republicans, 2,600 registered Democrats. Yet the Republican candidate got 1,900 votes. That's a 712% increase for the Republicans that was unexpected. And so, you know, people are starting to end, you know, vote fraud in Ohio now that the data is beginning to trickle in, November 2nd election, blah, blah, blah. So hey, this is going to be, here you've got the conservatives saying the exit polls were rigged. You've got Kerry partisans saying, no, the voting machines were rigged. Here's my take on all of this. Number one, it's over. Get over it. If there has been a crime committed, you know, hopefully it will be found out and prosecuted, and you know that'll be a whole new scandal. But for the moment, it's over. We need to move on. But the larger issue here in my mind is, what are we doing allowing private corporations into our vote in the first place? Why have we allowed? I mean, our vote is the heartbeat of our democracy. It is the franchise by which all our franchises are exercised. It is the way that we control our government. If there is any function that government should perform, it is controlling and conducting the vote. When did we get the strange and weird idea that privatizing the vote was a good idea? This is what we did in 2002 with the Help America Vote Act that was, you know, pushed through Congress by the Republicans and George W. Bush to privatize the vote, to turn the vote over to private corporations, and they funded it with $4 billion of your and my tax dollars. This, in my opinion, is a crime against democracy. This is a real problem. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a quick call here. Ed in California. Ed, you've been waiting a while. I've only got about a minute, but what's up?
Point on. The right has announced Hillary Clinton's going to run for president the next time.
Yeah.
I have an announcement.
Okay.
That the guy who was flying the fighter plane that bombed the school in New Jersey is going to be our next president from the Republican side. And would you please ask me or figure out why a man or plane was
3 miles off?
Bombing raid 3 or 4 minutes from a school.
Yeah, that's pretty strange. That's pretty strange. Very strange. Ed, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Alan in Florida on the line. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind?
Yes, I'd like to say that I wrote a letter about this voting machines, how they should be owned and operated by we the people and not by private corporations. And I sent my letter to like five different papers yesterday.
Good. Good on you. By the way, PR@AmericanProgress.org is the email address for the folks at the Center for American Progress. They're soliciting suggestions on ways to put our democracy back together and get active. And, you know, be sure to mention you heard about it on the Tom Hartman program. Drop an email to PR, as in public relations, PR@AmericanProgress.org. So, good on you, Alan, for sending out those letters. I congratulate you. I think that's great. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, happy Friday, Tom.
Thank you, Rick. You too.
Sorry that Bernie couldn't be there, but I guess he's taking a well-deserved rest.
Hopefully.
Getting to this polling and these machines and so forth, now I have a very conservative friend who voted for Michael Perutka, the Constitution Party candidate.
Right.
So he didn't really have a dog in this hunt, so to speak, vis-a-vis Kerry and Bush, but he's absolutely convinced that there was fraud and that actually Kerry did win Ohio and Florida. And one of the things he mentions is the pollster John Zogby.
Yeah, yeah. Zogby called them and was emphatic about it.
Right. Now, Zogby has been very accurate. He was accurate in 2000 and in 1996. And I remember Limbaugh kept touting Zogby in 1996 because he was the pollster that was making Dole look good.
Yeah.
But now, of course, in 2000... I remember the day of the election in 2000. Zogby was the only one to predict an Al Gore popular vote win, which is what happened.
Yeah.
Now, as I understand it, this time around, Zogby also configured his predictions around the Electoral College, and he came out, I don't think he came out with a popular vote win for Kerry, but I think he did say, and of course we know right now that even if everything stands as it is now, and that if Kerry would have gotten Ohio and Florida instead of Bush, he would have won the Electoral College, and this is what.
Or just Ohio. All he had to have was Ohio. That was
actually
it.
You're right. If the figures. So you know, we can sound like poor losers. We can sound like paranoid, conspiratorial people. But doesn't it interest you that Morris and Limbaugh have to both deal with this, and they completely turn it on its head? Because think about it. What if the liberals had juiced up or phonied up the exit polls? That isn't going to help them win the election.
Yeah. Dick Morris's theory was that they had juiced up the exit polls so that the exit poll results would be released midday on the East Coast.
But they weren't.
So that people on the so that people on the West Coast would say, oh, Kerry's already won. I shouldn't bother to go vote for Bush, and this would suppress the Bush vote. And this is the core of his conspiracy theory that he lays out in this article in the Hill today. And as you point out, nobody actually reported those exit polls, and in fact, the newspaper, the media, the TV networks all had an agreement not to report the exit polls until the last polls had closed, and so Morris's own conspiracy theory kind of falls apart.
By the way, just as an aside here, do you find this amusing that Fox News has Newt Gingrich, Bill Bennett, and Dick Morris on as their news analysts, all people with moral shortcomings in their lives?
Well,
find that amusing?
Yeah, in a way. I have to say, though, that I don't know of anybody who doesn't have moral shortcomings.
No, I know that, but I mean, Fox News, you know, yeah. with their...
we're holier than thou, yeah. I'm willing to cut those guys a little slack in their personal lives. I'm more concerned, frankly, with their policy issues.
True. That,
you know, I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. 1-866-RICK, 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Columbus, Ohio. Dave, we're just about out of time. You still there?
Hey,
nope. Yeah, hey, Dave.
How are you doing today?
Good. Got about 10 seconds.
Okay, hey, I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm a conservative, and we don't agree much, but I do agree with you on the voting machines, that it shouldn't be in control by the corporations. And there should be, I mean, as far as the programming.
Yeah. This should be open source.
It should be certified by both Republican and
absolutely. It should be open source. If we're going to use a machine, we should do it the same way we used to do with human beings, which is where you'd have a civil servant counting them, and you'd have somebody from the Republican Party, somebody from the Democratic Party looking
right.
over their shoulder. I agree with you. Thanks, Dave. Right. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Oric XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Oric XL.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin taxpayers are picking up the tab for health care when it comes to Walmart employees. According to a recent report by the Capital Times, 3,766 employees, spouses, and children are receiving health insurance from the state. The nation's largest employer has more than 25,000 employees in Wisconsin who average just over $10 per hour. The annual cost to taxpayers who are picking up the health care bill, $4.75 million. The story echoes a report released by UC Berkeley in August that found California taxpayers paid more than $86 million to cover Walmart employees enrolled in the state's health insurance and other social programs.
UAW workers, more than 600 of them, walked off their jobs Wednesday at four CNH Global NV plants in Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. The workers are striking because they have no contract after the company put up a final offer demanding concessions. A six-year contract ran out in May, and the UAW has been unable to reach an agreement on a new contract with CNH Global NV. 350 of the striking workers are in Racine, Wisconsin, 225 in Burlington, Iowa. The rest are in Minnesota and Illinois. The company makes tractors and backhoes and similar farm and construction equipment. The UAW recommended a no vote on the company's final contract offer, saying the offer takes back 40 years worth of gains in areas like health care costs and new higher wages. The company says that workers gave notice around 10 a.m., walked off their jobs around noon on Wednesday, and workers are picketing around the clock at those four plants.
If the House of Mouse doesn't come up with an extra slice of cheese, Mickey may be walking off the job. For the first time since the early 80s, workers at Disney World Resorts are considering a strike. According to the Services Trade Council, a group of six unions that represent more than 40% of the resort's workers, Disney executives are refusing to propose a reasonable offer for pay raises and health and retirement benefits. Disney says that the offers that have been made so far are fair and competitive. The two sides have been trying to negotiate for nearly 8 months. Union members are expected to vote down a recent proposal, and if so, the council believes that would give them the authority to call for a strike in the Magic Kingdom.
Union households accounted for 27 million voters this year, and 68% of those union voters cast their ballots for John Kerry in the battleground states. That's according to an independent election survey and exit polling done by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. Here's today's Dow Bob report. More than 5,500 workers were killed on the job in 2003. A total of 5,559 were officially recorded. That's an increase over workplace fatalities in 2002. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there were 4 deaths for every 100,000 workers. The 3 most common causes of workplace deaths are highway accidents, homicides, and falls. The census of fatal occupational injuries has been conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1992. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We'll be right back.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And in just a second, we're going to have David Kubiak on. First, let me just let's clean up the calls here. Bill in Wisconsin on the line. Bill, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, Tom. I just...
Whoop. Bill, we lost you. I'm sorry. It's life in the big city. Well, I'm... my apologies. You can give us a call back if you want. Let's go to David Kubiak. David is the executive director of 911truth.org. He was the director of Big Medicine, a research institute in Maine devoted to investigating corporate infiltration of our culture and government. A freelance journalist. He's on WBAI in New York City. David, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, sir.
David, you... are in on this thing. They're knowledgeable about it. I know that many of your efforts, your long and hard efforts, have had something to do with this this investigation. Tell us what's going on with Elliot Spitzer.
Elliot Spitzer is mulling the case. Have you informed your listeners of what the point of the case is?
Yeah, well, okay, let's start there. The case is about 9/11. I thought... ironically, that 9/11 was solved. I thought that, you know, we had a 9/11 commission, and they published this great big thick book, and everybody says it's a great piece of literature, and it's a New York Times bestseller, and there was a congressional commission. Weren't all the questions answered?
Not by original count. The Family Steering Committee, the group of victim family representatives that actually lobbied the Cain Commission into existence, presented approximately 383 questions to the commission to be answered in the course of its proceedings. And Jamie Gorelick, Kate, received the bulk of these at the first hearing back in March of 2003 and said, my God, this is extraordinarily impressive, and this will be the roadmap for our investigation. That's all on tape,
right.
C-SPAN,
right.
Archived kind of tape.
Yeah.
And we asked the families to go over the questions after the Cain Commission released its final and quote-unquote definitive report, and asked them how many questions they'd actually answered. And it turned out of the 383, they came up with approximately 40% that were essentially not even addressed. No, it was actually 70% that were not addressed. And then of the remaining 30%, perhaps 20 had very pro forma or superficial answers.
Right.
So
now,
their roadmap.
Now, some of these, David, could have been, you know, relatively smaller, inconsequential questions. Some of them could have been really large questions. What are some of the questions that are still on the table that are unanswered about 9/11 that Elliot Spitzer is contemplating investigating?
Well, the primary things still regard the initial response, you know, absence thereof, or what people who look at these kinds of cases or these bodies of evidence with a probable cause frame of mind would see as sort of prepared unpreparedness in spite of the storm of warnings.
Translate that into English for me, please.
Okay. There were a storm of warnings coming in from foreign intelligence agencies coming in at high levels of government. 23 were documented from 11 foreign governments, including Prime Minister Putin himself, essentially calling Bush and giving a warning in August. And then you add to this all of the so-called the summer of threat in terms of the chatter that the CIA was reporting that was putting Mr. Tenet's hair on fire all the time and keeping Richard Clark exercised. All of this, against this background, you see an extraordinary, almost engineered inactivity. The NORAD FAA air response practices, which had worked 67 times flawlessly in the previous year, were suddenly rewritten so that they had to include Mr. Rumsfeld in the chain of authorization. Now, this had never happened before. Before, it was just FAA calling up NORAD, NORAD responding, and everybody getting on with the case.
This was suddenly rewritten when?
In June of 2001.
Oh, interesting. This was after the first threat assessments that there was something going on with bin Laden that might involve airplanes that come in.
Right.
Yeah.
And the month before that, the threats were considered serious enough that Cheney took over the counterterrorism task force.
But it never met, did it?
No. He never happened to convene it after he became chairman.
We've got the CIA director's hair on fire. We've got Richard Clark getting hysterical. You've got Vlad the Impaler Putin calling up George W. Bush and saying, they're going to strike you. They're going to hijack airplanes. They're going to be hitting New York City and Washington, D.C. And so the response to this is Dick Cheney, who had been put in charge of the 9/11, or had been put in charge of the Counterterrorism Commission. This is all before 9/11. The response to this is Dick Cheney never once has his commission meet, although he is aggressively meeting with oil industry lobbyists for his energy commission. And inserted into the process of the FAA getting somebody to scramble a jet fighter, they have to get approval of Don Rumsfeld before they can do anything. And, of course, Rumsfeld wasn't quite available on 9/11 for a little while there, was he?
No, he was missing in action quite a bit of the time. And there's even some doubt. There's the whole chain of command issue on the day itself is also one of the big areas of inquiry, because there's an incredible contradiction between what Richard Clark says happened and what Myers said happened at the military command and what Rumsfeld said happened. And that's never actually been straightened out.
Do Clark and Myers agree, or do Myers and Rumsfeld agree, or do we have three different stories?
None of them actually agree, you know.
Okay. So the thing that he's looking at, the first issue is, why did the Bush administration not prepare for something they knew was coming? Now, Elliot Spitzer, as the Attorney General, does not have the authority to look into curiosities. He has the authority to look into crimes.
Yeah, well, the core of the crime is the mass murder of nearly 3,000 people there. And over that, he has absolute and perfect jurisdiction. And anything that was what they call accessorial conduct that facilitated or allowed those crimes to occur or helped cover them up in the aftermath are all fair game for somebody of his legal authority within the state of New York.
Yeah.
He does not have the authority or jurisdiction to essentially reopen the 9/11 Commission and go after all of the national security doctrines and practices that
right.
were in force at the time.
Right.
But to the extent that it inflicts grievous harm upon the citizens of his state, he is not only capable but bound by law.
Right. So there's a bunch of these questions. I'd like to get into a couple of the other questions. If any of our callers have a question for David Kubiak, who is the executive director of 911truth.org, the website www.911truth.org, our number 1-866-889-8894. David, let's take a quick call here. Dave in Humboldt County is in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you so much for your efforts on this. I have been just amazed that it's been so so little exposure in newspapers and radio. I've been studying the new Pearl Harbor, and I've talked with David Ray Griffin, also Jim Maher, the inside job, and to me it is overwhelming evidence that this never could have happened unless the White House wanted it to happen.
Okay, Dave in Humboldt County thinks that this was a conspiracy on the part of the White House to allow, or at least they allowed it to happen. David Kubiak, is that's going to be the focus, a part of Attorney General Elliot Spitzer's investigation specifically?
Yeah, I mean, that degree of criminal negligence is also felonious, and it's also, by almost constitutional definition, treasonous in the sense that it facilitates an act that kills American citizens by foreign enemies. So it gets into heavy turf immediately, and how Elliot Spitzer is going to handle it, despite his legal discretion to handle it, the political environment around him is going to play a great deal of is going to have a great deal of influence in his decision, unfortunately. And that's why we're also trying to let me back up 2 seconds, because
sure.
the genesis of this complaint was this Zogby poll that we commissioned right before the Republican convention.
Right.
And it was a Zogby International poll, and they're the official polling agency for Reuters and quoted constantly on the American media for other issues. And they found that 49% of New Yorkers, while right in the midst, I mean, this was announced the night before the Republican convention when they were wrapping themselves in 9/11 bunting and essentially squeezing 9/11 for all the fear and glory and votes they possibly could. Outside on the streets, according to the Zogby poll, 49% of New Yorkers believed that high officials within the government knew the attacks were coming and, quote, consciously failed to act, close quote. And 66% of the New Yorkers wanted an entirely new investigation, okay?
Yeah.
Now, you would think that would be news.
Well, I remember when that was reported. I mean, that made it into the newspaper. I reported it on this program.
It did not make it into a single New York newspaper, and it was quoted on the 27th page of the Washington Post.
Oh, I must have gotten it off the Center for American Progress or something. Because I remember reading the story on
the air. No, it was alive on the web.
Yeah.
But it never hit press. It never hit broadcast journalism except one backhand remark on the rally factor.
That's very interesting. So what are the other questions? The first question that Spitzer might be looking into is, was there criminal negligence on the part of the Bush administration in not acting when they were repeatedly warned that this was going to happen? What are the other questions that are unanswered?
There's the other ones that he has particular jurisdiction over and experience in is the insider trading questions. The extraordinary and unique spiking of selling of put options on American Airlines and United Airlines the week before the attack.
Now,
and
David,
only on American Airlines, United Airlines. It wasn't like they were betting on an industry-wide turndown in air travel.
Right.
They only went after American and they went after United, and the trades were something like 1,400% higher.
Now, David, I raised that question on this program, must be a month or so ago, and really kind of beat it rather hard. And I got several emails from people quoting little clips out of the 9/11 Commission report, essentially saying, you know, we looked into that and it's not a big deal.
Yeah. we were there. I mean, we talked to the victim family groups from the Family Steering Committee who were there when that was told to them, and they said, well, he said, nobody connected to bin Laden appears to be connected to this.
Yeah.
Which sort of begs the question of if there was internal knowledge of the event within the government or within the U.S. or within some
Well, who was buying these puts? Who was making these bets that America...
They refused to divulge that because they found that they did not seem to be culpable agents.
So it could have been the Carlyle Group. It could have been the Bush family. It could have been the Kerry family, for that matter. We just, you know, it could have been Teresa. We don't know, right?
Right. It'll probably, enter the bottom of the dungeons of state secrets until we can drag it out and, Freedom of Information Act in 20 years.
Well, I would sure like to know. I mean, this is something I'm very curious about. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you have a question for David Kubiak, the executive director of 911truth.org, website and a fearless crusader for truth here, a guy who's been working on this 9/11 issue for a long, long time. We have Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland on the line. Hey, Kenny, welcome to the program. Kenny, you're live and on the air, if you're still there. If you're listening on the radio, there's a few second delay, but yeah, maybe we've lost Kenny. Okay, we'll drop that. Kenny, you'll have to call back. David, what are the other questions? We've got criminal negligence. We've got what about the puts? What are the big questions here that need to be answered?
Well, one of the big questions for New Yorkers is World Trade Center Building 7, which right in front of many of them collapsed perfectly symmetrically. It was the first time that any skyscraper, a 47-story skyscraper, had collapsed because of apparent fire. And they were just small fires that were recorded constantly on the video that were puckering away up around the 12th and 19th floors. And, no major flames.
Why did this building go down? And it wasn't a hit by an airplane. And so
that was the entire damage to it.
Yeah.
And then they have, Silverstein, the owner, on tape talking to PBS later, saying, well, there was so much loss of life and so much damage, we thought the hell with it, and I just told him to pull it. And then we watched the building go down. And that's an exact quote from his tape.
Now, so he's saying he said that he ordered that the building be destroyed on 9/11 that would require that there had to be explosives planted in there in advance. This is getting into the realm of the what are considered to be conspiracy nut things, theories.
Well, I mean, you watch him say it. It was his building. He said we wanted him to pull it and watch it go down. Now, you're right. I mean,
pretty strange.
Setting up a building for controlled demolitions can take like 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
at the very least.
How is this all rigged together for such a perfect...
And Elliot Spitzer would like to know. Good question. Let's ask Tony in Grand Rapids is on the line. Tony, you have a question for David Kubiak.
Well, first I have a comment. I'd just like to say go get him. But has Richard Clark said anything to you about this star or not?
Pardon?
Richard Clark, he was...
Have you spoken with Richard Clark about this, David?
No, he has not returned the calls. Okay. And we don't know exactly where Richard is on this. Okay. We know that he must have major questions because his account of events conflicts rather severely with the official narrative put out by the administration.
Sure he would. Let's go to Logan in Eureka, California. Logan, welcome to the program. You're on the air with David.
Hi, thanks. I got a couple questions. One is on the day 9/11 happened, there was the reports of, I guess there were Arabs who were dancing around, cheering and stuff, and then it turned out to be Israelis. I was wondering if you knew anything more on that, and also was it true that Condoleezza Rice phoned Willie Brown and told him not to take a plane that day?
Okay, good questions. We've only got about 30 seconds left, David.
Dancing Israelis, they were taken into custody, interrogated for 3 days, released, and flown back to Tel Aviv. We have no record of what the interrogations occurred, and there were a bunch of other...
Okay, did Condi Rice call Willie Brown?
That has never been confirmed.
Okay, that's never been confirmed. So for more information, you can go to 911truth.org, www.911truth.org. David Kubiak, thanks for being with us, David. I do appreciate it. Have a good one. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272. How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least 1 million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand, and that's good for all of us.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Darren in Troy, New Hampshire on the line. Hey, Darren, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, this is not the first time I've heard conspiracies similar to this, but my problem with this whole issue is the timing of this information. Here we are just a couple days after the election, and now...
Don't you think, Darren, that Elliot Spitzer held off on announcing that he was going to do this investigation until after the election so he wouldn't be accused of being political?
Well, the whole concept that somehow the Bush administration had something to do with setting off explosive device in the Twin Towers,
frankly, in my opinion, that's over the top. I can't go there at all. But the question, and in fact, David wasn't even suggesting that. David was suggesting that one of the things to be investigated was why the guy who owned the building said that he had ordered that, and that's on videotape. Another question to be investigated was why the Bush administration, despite all these repeated warnings, basically did absolutely nothing in the first 9 months of the Bush administration leading up to 9/11. And was that criminal negligence? Those are really two completely separate issues. I'd like to hear the answers to both of those. I am not one of those who thinks that these buildings were blown up, but, who knows? Who knows? Darren, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's move along here. Ryan in Michigan on the line. Hey, Ryan, what's up?
Hey, Hartman. Love the show.
Thank you.
All right. The whole election, there's all these theories that are coming out of our liberal minds. You know, a liberal mind is always searching for truth, and so they try to associate.
I think the conservative mind is too, Ryan. I got to tell you, I think that's just the human thing. But anyhow,
yeah,
your point.
Okay, but there's a lot of investigation a lot of speculation about how they use the gay marriage to try to promote people to come out and vote.
Yeah,
I think it goes a little deeper than that. I think that, for the most part, the average voter isn't really too concerned with politics. They're more concerned with culture. And so by making the right wing more accepted culturally, they won the election.
They made politics about culture. Yeah, that, absolutely.
Their government, they're governing culture.
And, but see, I gotta tell you, Ryan. Historically, politics have been about culture. In the 30s, for example, with Roosevelt, it was all about culture. It was about, you know, let's restore the middle class. It was the war against the working people by the wealthy and the big corporations. It's just that the politics, in fact, has always been about culture. In the early days of the American Revolution, or after the Revolution, I mean, the early days of America, the whole battle between Adams and Jefferson was about culture. It's just that the terms of the discussion have been changed over time, and they'll continue to change. They'll continue to evolve. I appreciate the call, Ryan. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin taxpayers are picking up the tab for health care when it comes to Walmart employees. According to a recent report by the Capital Times, 3,766 employees, spouses, and children are receiving health insurance from the state. The nation's largest employer has more than 25,000 employees in Wisconsin who average just over $10 per hour. The annual cost to taxpayers who are picking up the health care bill, $4.75 million. The story echoes a report released by UC Berkeley in August that found California taxpayers paid more than $86 million to cover Walmart employees enrolled in the state's health insurance and other social programs.
UAW workers, more than 600 of them, walked off their jobs Wednesday at four CNH Global NV plants in Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. The workers are striking because they have no contract after the company put up a final offer demanding concessions. A six-year contract ran out in May, and the UAW has been unable to reach an agreement on a new contract with CNH Global NV. 350 of the striking workers are in Racine, Wisconsin, 225 in Burlington, Iowa. The rest are in Minnesota and Illinois. The company makes tractors and backhoes and similar farm and construction equipment. UAW recommended a no vote on the company's final contract offer, saying the offer takes back 40 years' worth of gains in areas like health care costs and new higher wages. The company says that workers gave notice around 10 a.m., walked off their jobs around noon on Wednesday, and workers are picketing around the clock at those four plants.
If the House of Mouse doesn't come up with an extra slice of cheese, Mickey may be walking off the job. For the first time since the early 80s, workers at Disney World Resorts are considering a strike. According to the Services Trade Council, a group of six unions that represent more than 40% of the resort's workers, Disney executives are refusing to propose a reasonable offer for pay raises and health and retirement benefits. Disney says that the offers that have been made so far are fair and competitive. The two sides have been trying to negotiate for nearly 8 months. Union members are expected to vote down a recent proposal, and if so, the council believes that would give them the authority to call for a strike in the Magic Kingdom.
Union households accounted for 27 million voters this year, and 68% of those union voters cast their ballots for John Kerry in the battleground states. That's according to an independent election survey and exit polling done by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. Here's today's Dow Bob report. More than 5,500 workers were killed on the job in 2003, a total of 5,550. 59 were officially recorded. That's an increase over workplace fatalities in 2002. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there were 4 deaths for every 100,000 workers. The 3 most common causes of workplace deaths are highway accidents, homicides, and falls. The census of fatal occupational injuries has been conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1992. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
At last, the golden age of television is upon us. But alas, this is not the golden age of TV quality, but literally the age of TV gold, when advertisers have become the programming. Leading the way is Disney's ABC television network, which has now opened its expanse of our public airwaves to complete domination by sponsors. I don't mean just the ads that sponsors run on its shows, or even the not-so-subtle placement of sponsors' products in the shows, but rather sponsors that become the featured character of the show. Sears has stepped out as the first of ABC's new advertising stars, putting itself forward as the centerpiece of the network's latest reality show called Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. Not that Sears has any actual dramatic talent, but it does have more than $1 million that it paid to ABC to write the corporation into the script of this 6-part series portraying stories of home renovation. The actual actors will be using Sears tools in their work, adding Sears appliances to the renovated homes and decorating with Sears furniture. If that's too subtle for viewers, there'll also be Sears trucks delivering merchandise. Branded workers from Sears home improvement centers will occasionally arrive on the scene, and the show's cast will make trips to Sears for supplies. The commercially crass rationale for this all-Sears show is that advertisers need a way to outfox you TV viewers who are using your clickers to zap past those annoying commercial breaks. So forget the ads. The sponsors will be the shows. To fabricate this great leap forward, ABC even has a senior vice president for integrated marketing and promotion. He assures us that while, quote, Sears plays a role in the personality of the show, ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped in a show. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, there still are a few artistic standards in television.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to our program broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, all across the United States. Tom Hartman here with you. The Vermont Progressive Party. Here's the big, you know, all this soul searching going on among Democrats right now. Some of it going on in the Republican Party as well. Another discussion. But the Democrats in particular How can we reach out? How can we turn some of those red states blue, or they're saying? I'm not a Democrat, so I shouldn't use the we in the personal sense, but the third person we, if there is such a thing. Anyhow, they're asking, how can they reach out to these folks? How can they broaden the base of the Democratic Party? And make it more effective. How can they grow the Democratic Party? Has it really become what Rush Limbaugh says? Has it really become a bunch of snobby, elitist, brie-eating, wine-sipping, Volvo-driving? Or is there something broader? For that matter, an even larger question, how do liberals and progressives reach out and take and get into the Democratic Party and make inroads into America broadly? And these are the issues that are at the top of everybody's mind, I think, right now. And interestingly, the Progressive Party here in Vermont, here in the People's Republic, the state of Vermont, has picked up this from today's Burlington Free Press. In Tuesday's election, progressive candidates won 6 House seats, picking up 2 in the traditionally conservative Northeast Kingdom and another in Windsor County, while returning 2 incumbents in Burlington and 1 in Brattleboro. And the head of the Progressive Party here, you know, many states it's the Green Party, here it's the Progressive Party. He said, more than identifying as Republicans, many people see themselves as working people. And one of the folks who got elected to the House of Representatives in Vermont, a fellow by the name of Randall Anthony, I don't have his first name here. His last name was Randall. Anyway, he says, my first engagement with politics was with Anthony Polina back in 1985. Polina helped Randall and other farmers win passage of a tax relief program for agricultural land in active use. So I wanted to get Anthony Polina on. Anthony Polina ran for governor of the state of New Hampshire against Howard Dean and against a Republican, what was it, that Ruth Dwyer back then, Anthony?
Yeah, Ruth Dwyer. She was pretty conservative.
Yeah, she, boy. In the year 2000, he ran for lieutenant governor in the year 2002, and now he does a regular talk show on WDEV, a radio station here in Vermont, and is active in the Progressive Party and progressive causes. And Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you here. Not New Hampshire, Vermont.
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah. No, we are in Vermont.
Did I say New Hampshire?
When you're on the satellite stuff, you lose track of which planet you're on. Right?
Yeah, it's been a long week, Anthony. I got to tell you, it's just been a long, long week. If I said New Hampshire, I meant Vermont. You know, anyhow, here we are. And how, in your mind, has the Progressive Party wrought this miracle that in the gun-toting, chainsaw-hauling, wood-burning, heating countryside of Vermont, the rural countryside of Vermont, that one of the fastest-growing political movements is the Progressive Party?
Well, I think the first thing is that we've done it by not making the mistake that Democrats have made around the country, which is that we have done it by not trying to be like Republicans, which is part of the dilemma the Democrats face.
Yeah.
We've made it very clear that we are something different, and we're going to speak directly to the needs of Vermonters and speak in a language that they can understand. You were talking before about how maybe some Democrats are soul-searching and they think they become too intellectual or, you know, whatever, snobbish. I don't think that's the case here in Vermont, but I think there is a point to be made there. And we have made every effort over the years to stay very focused on the issues that are of concern to the majority of the people of Vermont, and we've been able to build trust with them over the years, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, this is really just a ground wars campaign in many ways, but it's not just a campaign. It's not oh gee, this is what we've got to do to get their votes. I mean, these are really the issues that you guys are really working on and you really care about.
And we work on them in between. We work on, let me put it this way, we come to it, I certainly do, and most of the people I work with come to our Progressive Party work as organizers who have been involved in other issues.
Right.
I went into electoral politics as an outgrowth of my issue work, and that's very different than people who wake up and say, I think I'll run for office.
Yeah.
And then when the election's over, they kind of fade away, and then next, 2 or 4 years later, they pop up again. We're issue organizers, and people respect that very much. So, you know, we sit down in people's living rooms and in town halls. You know, we don't try to reach them through television advertising.
That's a luxury that you have in a small state. I mean, there's only 600,000 people in this whole state. It was, you know, like Fred and Pat, you know, doing the cookies with Fred and Pat, as they Pat Leahy and his Republican opponent Fred Tuttle four years ago traveled around the state or was it 2 years ago? I forget which election
it was. A while, yeah,
yeah. Four years ago.
You know, but I think you're right, though. I think the smallness is important, and I don't disagree with that. We're lucky in the sense of to be in a smaller state,
I don't mean to minimize that, though, Anthony,
sure.
Because that is also the nature of this vast American heartland that has all gone Republican.
That's right. These are people who live in small towns who decide to vote for George Bush. I mean, go figure it. I mean, I think that to some degree, maybe I'm wrong in this, but my own feeling is that there are a lot of people out there who are suffering economically, and so they tend to turn to religion, right? They've given up hope. Their jobs are outsourced. They can't afford to send their kids to college. Their communities are falling apart, so they go to church, and God bless them. I think that's fine. I think in Vermont, what we've been able to do, though, over the years, in part because of the activism and the kind of people we are, is there's a fairly, I could be wrong, and you talk to people around the country every day, Tom, but I think people are fairly sophisticated in terms of what corporate power does to people in Vermont. And I find that as progressives, we really find that there are many places where the views and of progressives actually come round all the way around, go past the Democrats, and actually meet up with those people who call themselves Republicans.
But I have to say, Anthony, I think that is true absolutely right across the United States. And frankly, I think that is true for probably 60 or 70% of the people in the Democratic Party who really are more progressive than they are Republican light. And that the Democrats have just absolutely failed to position themselves. This Thomas Frank wrote a great piece in today's New York Times, and Paul Krugman has a piece in there, and Krugman's saying, you know, the Democrats are going to blow it again. They're going to go, you know, light and Thomas Frank, it's a strategy for suicide. If anybody wants to call by the way, get in on this conversation, our number 1-866-889-8894. You're welcome to call in. We're talking with Anthony Pollina, a candidate on the Progressive Party ticket for governor and for lieutenant governor here in Vermont. Talk show host, a participant, you know, major factor in the Progressive Party in Vermont, which in many other states is the local variation is the Green Party. Here it's the Progressive Party. The Green Party is pretty much non-existent in Vermont, and you're picking up seats. You just had huge electoral successes here in this election.
And originally, as people may know and you know, the Progressive Party has had a base in Burlington, which is the largest city in Vermont, for a number of years. But now there are six representatives, which is significant, and four of them are from rural areas. Yeah. And I think, to me, that's what makes this development particularly exciting.
This is very significant. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Michael in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Michael, you're live with Anthony Pollina and Tom Hartman. What's up?
Yes, good morning, or actually afternoon there. Now, Tom, you've been talking about how we should infiltrate the Democratic Party. I wonder what Anthony's view of that, and why haven't the progressives in Vermont tried to rather infiltrate the Democratic Party like you've been advocating? Is that something unique to Vermont? And the second question is, how do you work with the Democrats in the state legislature? How does that work with committee assignments, where there's a majority of Democrats and progressives? How do you guys work that out?
Okay, why don't we take the second one first? Thank you, Michael, for the call.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
No, it's a good question. The progressives stay independent. They have their own progressive caucus in the legislature. And generally, they have not been made committee vice chairs or chairs, and so that's been something of a struggle.
Right.
However, they have led significant efforts on some really important issues. For instance, Vermont passed the first law requiring the labeling of genetically engineered seeds, and that was led by progressives. Vermont recently passed a medical marijuana bill. That effort was led by progressives. So they've been able to distinguish themselves on issues. They do work very well, the legislators, with Democrats. But quite honestly, they have to work well with Republicans also. And I think they're actually better legislators for it. They're willing to stand with their, you know, on their principles. They challenge the Democrats at times, but also work pretty well with them.
So this is something that at a local level is working out well. Although I have to say, Anthony, if you hadn't been on the ballot 2 years ago, in all probability, we would have a Democrat as lieutenant governor instead of a Republican.
Right, and I would say that in all probability, Tom's right. What he's saying, in 2 years ago, I ran for lieutenant governor, and
you got a quarter of the vote, didn't you?
Right, one out of four Vermonters picked up a ballot in a three-way statewide race and voted for a third-party candidate. Otherwise, we would have had a Democrat who, frankly, would have been pretty darn moderate. And it goes back to what you were saying before, Tom, about how a lot of Democrats, people who vote Democrat around the country, and I think in Vermont, are actually more progressive than their leadership.
Yeah, we need to be taking that back. We got about 2 minutes before we got to take a break here, Anthony. And I've got a bunch of calls stacking up here. Let's take a few of them. Jeff in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom. I don't think you guys get it. Okay, I grew up in New Hampshire. Okay, my father still lives there, and now I live in Tulsa. It's a whole world, different world down here. These people, religion is number one, and they keep hearing this gay issue and abortion. And the Democrats tell me, I'm a Republican, the Democrats tell me the Democratic Party is leaving them. And if you look at Oklahoma, predominantly everybody in Oklahoma is a registered Democrat, and look, it was totally for Bush.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anthony, your thoughts on that?
Well, he's right. I mean, all I would say is that I find when we may disagree on gay marriage, for example, but frankly, it doesn't have to be an issue. What I find is when we sit down with Republicans or conservatives, we talk about trade. We talk about corporate control. We talk about the erosion of democracy.
Talk about jobs.
We agree on those issues.
Well, see, that's the thing. What the Republicans have done so effectively is they've taken these really very, very small issues and turned them into great big deals. We've got about 30 seconds here. Vicki in Grand Rapids, last comment or question?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Vicki.
The reason I'm calling is, I don't know if you know, but like on the far left side of some of the Democratic blogs, there's a real cry to get Dr. Dean as the head of the DNC to try to make some progressive,
right,
forward, thoughtful change. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I'm all in favor of it. Anthony, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, all I would say to folks out there, I mean, I would find it interesting. I think he was inspired a lot of people this year. Those of us in Vermont found that the Howard Dean campaigning for president was not at all the Howard Dean who was governor of Vermont.
Yeah, no, he was a Rockefeller Republican when he was the governor. Anthony Pollina with the Progressive Party in Vermont. Thank you, Anthony, for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I do appreciate it.
Keep the conversation going.
In fact, actually, the lines are lighting up. Anthony, why don't you hang on for a minute? We'll take this over the break. Okay, it's 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECOWINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is.
But we're figuring it out. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Anthony Polina, the Progressive Party in Vermont. And, Anthony, let's take a couple of these calls and sure. see what folks think about these issues. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Susan in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Is it all right if I'm on speaker?
It sounds okay.
Okay, good. Yeah, gosh, my mind has been racing all over the place since I dialed. But I'm really thinking that we have less to think about what we did wrong because, frankly, I don't know how you get so many, you know, 100 million of people to all be thinking along the same track.
Yeah, well, on the one hand, we had more people who turned out and voted for John Kerry than have ever voted for any candidate for president of the United States
right.
in history.
And that's what I'm thinking about, truthfully, is why we are not looking about, you know, at how to actually get that criminal out of the White House.
Well, that's a whole other issue. But I think, you know, for right now, Susan, I'm you know, thanks for raising the point, but I think for right now I want to focus on this thing, Anthony. How in your mind could the Democratic Party, or for that matter, if a third party movement, you know, was going to come along? But you know, my take on this is at least at the national level, until we have instant runoff voting or proportional representation, you know, those of us who believe in these values should really be moving one of the major parties, and the Democratic Party is it. How do we get the Democratic Party how do they respond? What's the strategy when the Republicans raise the, oh, it's flag burning, as George Herbert Walker Bush did, or, oh, it's gay marriage, as George W. Bush did, and all the Democrats know, you know, hey, this is no big deal. I mean, you know, these are not huge issues. These are not life and death issues. These are not the nation turns on them issues. These are not war and peace issues. These are not survival of the family issues. But they have an attitude and opinion about it. They could just surrender it and give it to the Republicans and say, next, and the Republicans would just keep throwing them up there, one over after. Or they can take a stand and say, hey, we're going to take a principle on and then lose. I mean, what do they do?
Well, I would say, first of all, I want to say to that caller, I don't think she or we should think we did anything wrong in electing George Bush, meaning I think that the National Democrats may have done something wrong, but I don't think people should take it personally. I think that what people should do is focus on their local communities. And, you know, I've stood in front of groups of people who said, why do we have to have gays getting married, or in Vermont's case, civil unions? And I said, look, I can understand why you're worried about that and why that's an issue. And I think part of it is because you think your wage, wouldn't it be nice if your wages were as much of an issue as that is. And there's ways that you can turn those issues around and let people know that you understand that they have concerns about gay marriage, they have concerns about abortion, but they also have concerns about sending their kids to college.
And the Democrats just completely blew it, completely failed to do this.
Yeah.
I agree. 1-866-888-9894. Let's go to Lynn in Eureka, California. Lynn, you're on the air.
Hi. I just am calling. We keep hearing about this values voting. I was a values voter. I'm a Christian, and I voted for John Kerry because he was the moral choice.
Mm. So
I don't agree that the positions that George Bush takes are moral. I mean, I agree with it would be better if we didn't have abortion, I believe. But we can't force our views on other people. Jesus taught us by example, and we should teach the same way.
Yeah, ultimately, it always comes down to values. I mean, politics has always been about values, Anthony. We got about a minute left.
I agree. And the caller, you know, I think that about forcing your views on anybody. I find that as an organizer, it's about me sitting down with people and finding out what's on their minds and how we can work with them on things that are important to them. And that's what I meant before, that, you know, the Democrats and Republicans, their agenda is set by, you know, some fat cat in Washington. The agenda should be set locally.
Or by some consultant.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Bob Fromm, the whole Democratic Leadership Council, in my opinion, has been an absolute disaster for the Democrats, and this party is going to either change or die.
And I just want to mention the caller said about morality and values. You know, I would sit there and listen to a debate, and John Kerry would say to the people around this country, I'm going to find those terrorists, and I'm going to kill them. And I'm saying to myself, gee, I'm glad my daughter what if your fifth grade civics class is listening to that?
Yeah,
the debate
yeah.
is about he's going to kill people.
It's I know. It's, it was the pandering of the worst sort. Anthony, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Anthony Polina. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin taxpayers are picking up the tab for health care when it comes to Walmart employees. According to a recent report by the Capital Times, 3,766 employees, spouses, and children are receiving health insurance from the state. The nation's largest employer has more than 25,000 employees in Wisconsin who average just over $10 per hour. The annual cost to taxpayers who are picking up the health care bill, $4.75 million. The story echoes a report released by UC Berkeley in August that found California taxpayers paid more than $86 million to cover Walmart employees enrolled in the state's health insurance and other social programs.
UAW workers, more than 600 of them, walked off their jobs Wednesday at 4 CNH Global NV plants in Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. The workers are striking because they have no contract after the company put up a final offer demanding concessions. A six-year contract ran out in May, and the UAW has been unable to reach an agreement on a new contract with CNH Global NV. 350 of the striking workers are in Racine, Wisconsin, 225 in Burlington, Iowa. The rest are in Minnesota and Illinois. The company makes tractors and backhoes and similar farm and construction equipment. The UAW recommended a no vote on the company's final contract offer, saying the offer takes back 40 years' worth of gains in areas like health care costs and new higher wages. The company says that workers gave notice around 10 a.m., walked off their jobs around noon on Wednesday, and workers are picketing around the clock
at those four plants.
If the House of Mouse doesn't come up with an extra slice of cheese, Mickey may be walking off the job. For the first time since the early 80s, workers at Disney World Resorts are considering a strike. According to the Services Trade Council, a group of six unions that represent more than 40% of the resort's workers, Disney executives are refusing to propose a reasonable offer for pay raises and health and retirement benefits. Disney says that the offers that have been made so far are fair and competitive. The two sides have been trying to negotiate for nearly 8 months. Union members are expected to vote down a recent proposal, and if so, the council believes that would give them the authority to call for a strike in the Magic Kingdom.
Union households accounted for 27 million voters this year, and 68% of those union voters cast their ballots for John Kerry in the battleground states. That's according to an independent election survey and exit polling done by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. Here's today's Dal Bob report. More than 5,500 workers were killed on the job in 2003. A total of 5,559 were officially recorded. That's an increase over workplace fatalities in 2002. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there were 4 deaths for every 100,000 workers. The 3 most common causes of workplace deaths are highway accidents, homicides, and falls. The census of fatal occupational injuries has been conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1992. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What's the world coming to? What they say isn't true. You can't plant no seed where there's only greed.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. What is the future of the Democratic Party? What's the future of the Republican Party? What's the future of third parties in the United States? How are things going to move? Arlen Specter now, by the way, speaking of the Republican Party, Arlen Specter has officially apologized to George Bush. He had originally said, and I quote, "When you talk about judges who would challenge the right of a woman to choose, overturn Roe v. Wade, I think it's unlikely. The president is well aware of what happened when a bunch of his nominees were sent up with a filibuster, and I would expect the president to be mindful of the considerations which I am mentioning." Well, the president didn't like hearing that, and Arlen Specter immediately heard from the White House that he was to shut his mouth and go running off with his tail between his legs, which he did. 3 hours later, he issued a news release. "Contrary to press accounts, I did not warn the president about anything and was very respectful of his constitutional authority on the appointment of federal judges." Arlen Specter put in his place by George Bush. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Patrick in New Orleans on line one there?
Yeah, we're here. Sure
hey,
enough, new.
Patrick, welcome. Welcome to the program. What's up?
I heard a very interesting conversation yesterday about between you and a young man, I believe, that he asked you, what will the Democratic Party do to make themselves different? What do you think they'll do? Do you think they'll go more to the little bit more to the right? Or you think they'll stay the same course and try to dig in their heels and go to more to the left?
I think it's an open question, Patrick.
Patrick,
are you Irish or are you affecting an Irish accent?
I'm Irish. I'm from Dublin.
Yeah, from Dublin. And how do the politics shake out there in terms of right and left? The last time I was in Ireland was a number of years ago. There was a national debate going on about whether or not to legalize divorce.
Where do you see, well, there's too much of the Catholic Church is still involved in the issue of divorce, because what you have is the Church of England that's trying to make their influence, which is unduly fair upon the Irish Catholics.
Yeah, well, this is the battle up in the north that's been going on forever.
And I assure you, it's been going on 700 years. It's got no end in sight.
Yeah.
And we, the Irish patriots, will not give up what we see as ours to give to the English.
Yeah. So as an Irish citizen, what are you seeing in American politics? What's your sense of this?
I don't take offense to this new, but what I see is I ask the question, why is it that the American people seem to ask for the same control that's being forced upon us Irish?
Interesting. Ask for the same control that's being forced upon the Irish, that control being from, well, what's I think that the Irish think of the English as another power, as a foreign power. Are we asking for a foreign power to force itself upon us?
It seems to me that what we, the Irish, we want We want the freedom to decide for ourselves, not a contract with foreigners, such
right.
as the English.
Right.
The American people, I thought the republic was supposed to be, was that between the individual states and the federal government that was supposed to be the agent of the people.
And how is it not?
It is not. It seems to me that the states are now the subservience of the federal government.
I see. Oh, well, you know, this is the great debate that was settled by the Civil War. I mean, prior to the Civil War, states had enormous power, and after the Civil War, states' power was dramatically reduced. That's just the kind of the history of the United States.
It seems to me the same occupation as the English.
Yeah.
Over my country.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Patrick, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate the call.
Well, thank you for letting me call.
Sure. I appreciate your insight also. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jason in Temecula, California, is that it?
It's actually Temecula, California.
Temecula. Okay. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Hey, I've been doing a tad bit of research and listening to your program on C-SPAN and also streaming for a couple of days. And I agree that as Democrats and progressives, we need to come together and reform the party itself, because a lot of it's been destroyed by partisan issues.
Here's the problem. What is a partisan issue? What does that mean?
Well, something that's divisive. More than likely.
You mean within the party? See, I think the destruction of the Democratic Party has happened in basically three stages. The first stage, oddly enough or sadly enough, was when Lyndon Johnson made the conscious, intentional decision against the advice of his advisors to go along with Bobby Kennedy and confront George Wallace down in the South and push through civil rights legislation and end apartheid in the United States. The Democrats in the South, I lived in Atlanta, Georgia for 16 years. I'm familiar with the South. And the Democrats in the South in the 40s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, had been segregationists. I mean, you know, that's why Strom Thurmond changed from being a Democrat to Republican, was because LBJ made that decision. So first of all, they lost the racist vote, the white racist vote. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. It's just what is. Second, they did it, unfortunately, without changing people's minds so much, which I think is the tragedy of it. Instead of reforming people so they weren't racist anymore, like in South Africa where they had the Reconciliation Commission and all this kind of stuff, that never happened here. There was never really the healing that I think we should have had. So that was number one. And then the second was when Bill Clinton came into power and he brought the Democratic Leadership Council to being, Bob Frum and his bunch, maybe I have his name wrong, but in any case, they said, you know, hey, these corporations, they got a lot of money. If we're going to survive against the Republicans who are getting all this corporate money, we got to cozy up to the corporations. And, you know, at the time, it made a lot of sense because it didn't seem like there was any other way to get money, and if you didn't get money, you didn't survive. Now, with the Internet, Howard Dean, MoveOn.org, and all that, a third way has been shown. And I'm hopeful that the Democratic Party is going to track that third way and go down that road and become a much more populist party. But for the last 12 years, more or less, the Democratic Party has been becoming Republican light, in my opinion. What are your
Yeah, I definitely agree. As it is said many, many times, both parties have been taken over by corporate interests, which we know very well.
So I
think we need to have a populist movement, as you said, among Democrats.
Yeah,
and
this is we've got to take back the Democratic Party. It's Thomas Frank today in the New York Times. He says, meanwhile, out in red America, the right wing populist revolt continues apace. It is a revolution that plans to overthrow the aristocrats by cutting their taxes. Now think about that for a minute. I mean, it's absolutely ironic. The Republican populists, we're going to overthrow those nasty elite people by cutting their taxes. That's been the Republican message, and people have been buying it. Jason, thanks for the call. Good to hear you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Bernie in West Newbury, Vermont on the line. Hey, Bernie. You are live and on the air. And if you're listening to your radio, there's a five-second delay, so you should listen to your telephone. Bernie, I'm going to put you back on hold, and we're going to go to Gus in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Gus, what's up?
Hello. I just call in regards. How long will it take the Democratic Party to wake up to the fact, you know, they need to go back to the working class people?
I agree.
I mean, I was in Texas when Bush was a governor. He was a horrible governor, by the way. And I realized then this guy and the Republican Party is not for the working class people. I wish Texas would wake up to that fact. Anyway, moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we have lost so many jobs up here. And Michigan, I think, is getting it because we did go for Kerry.
Yeah.
And how many jobs has to be lost? How many corporations have to rip out these machines that produce goods till we wake up?
Well, this is, you know, John Edwards was doing a really good job of bringing this issue out, and John Kerry kept trying to bring it back to it, but the Republicans just kept coming back to, do you really want gays to be married? You know, do you,
well, that is such a stupid issue. You know, I'm not for gay marriage, but I am for civil unions. It just makes sense to me. If somebody wants to be together, let them be together, you know.
Yeah.
And it just seems like the flag burning before the bigger
issue, Gus, is that it's not an issue. It's like, you know, here in Vermont, we've had civil unions for 4 or 6 years, something like that, for a couple of years, and I can't tell any difference. I haven't seen some epidemic of divorce.
How much more do we have to lose before I guess conservative Christians, if that's what they call themselves, need to wake up? You know, how you the people worry about abortions, but if you don't have a job, you can't even pay for that.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. It's pretty strange. Thanks for the call, Gus. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, let's try Bernie in West Newbury, Vermont again. Hey, Bernie, you listening to the phone this time?
Here.
Okay, what's up? What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? My mind is that I voted for George Bush because I had never seen a Democrat liberal that didn't cry when they got beat.
Okay.
And another thing, they're all for big unions, and they're all for give away to welfare. And I don't agree with that. I agree with somebody earning their keep.
So, okay. All righty. Great. Bernie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Do you want to talk about those issues, Bernie?
I don't see any reason to. The people ought to smarten up to it. You know, if you don't earn your keep, you shouldn't expect giveaways all the time.
Okay, so you
and,
don't think...
I see the Democratic Party is a giveaway society, and I just got sick of it.
Yeah, okay. So, Bernie, in your opinion, it's okay if corporations unionize, if they organize together and form trade associations or form corporations, but it's not okay if workers do.
Seems like they have a legal right under the Taft-Hartley law. I belong to union. I was a hard-working person underneath a union. And it seemed to me like after a while I looked around and people didn't want to work, and just a few of us did the work.
Yeah, so you saw, okay. All righty, Bernie, thanks for the call.
Well, you're welcome.
I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Gus in, we lost that one. Rich in Santa Fe. Hey, Rich.
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Two quick points. First of all, as far as the Democratic Party, and I'm a devout Democrat, but I'm also a very devout Christian. And it seems to me, unless and until the Democratic Party and its campaign is willing to take on the Christian right with the true gospel of Jesus Christ, and now is the perfect opportunity. They have a Republican Congress, House and Senate, Republican President, Republican Supreme Court.
Yeah, this is the Matthew 24 conundrum. Where the only place in the New Testament where the disciples, to get into religion here for just a moment, and then this is not a preacher show, but the only place in the entire New Testament where the disciples came to Jesus and said, "How do we get into heaven?" is in Matthew, I believe, 24. And he says, in the last days he's going to be judging, and there's going to be the sheep and the goats and all this kind of stuff. And boil it down, he says the only way to get into heaven is to feed the hungry, care for the poor, clothe the naked, visit those in prison, and care for the sick. And they say, "Oh, but we didn't see you sick." And he says, "As you did to the least of these, among your brethren, you did unto me." And that's the morality, that the principal value of Christianity, I think, that the Republicans have abandoned and that has been the historic bedrock of the Democrats. That spiritual value is the core of the welfare system, for example, that Bernie was just telling us he doesn't like.
Well, it goes deeper than that even, and more basic than that, Tom. Jesus Christ himself said, "You will know them by their fruits." They have complete control over the government. If they don't get abortion banned, if they don't get gays banned,
then, you know, what can the Christian right say about their values?
Well, they won't, because they don't want to. They want to have these stalking horses. This is the game that the Republicans play with the minds of people and have for the better part of two decades now. They started out with the flag banning thing, and that is that they take an issue that they know ultimately, you know, is a silly issue, or that, you know, won't pass a constitutional test, or that they just, you can't achieve it, and they keep flogging and flagging that issue, and keep returning to it, and like you said, now they've got the power, and let's see if they hold on, you know, let's see if they can pull any of these things out of the hat. I predict they will not pull any of them out of the hat, because they really don't want to. They've got to have that opposition out there. Rich, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Richard in Southern Illinois on the line. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Tom, I listen to BINI, and what the town I live in, Carterville, there's only three people in the town I live in that had Kerry Edwards signs in their yard. I want to ask why. They said, well, the DNC takes this area for granted, and Barack Obama in this area in Williamson County, Franklin, the Democratic stronghold, got 3,000 more votes than Kerry did. Yeah. And that's the thing. They took Southern Illinois for granted, and they only got one county.
Yeah.
People feel betrayed by Kerry because he never came to the area.
Yeah.
Clint came to the area. Geraldine Ferraro came to the area. Everybody comes to the area, except this time Kerry took Southern Illinois for granted, and he lost it.
Yeah, Richard, I get it, and I understand your point, but I think that there's a larger issue here, and it's not that so much that he didn't show up in the area, although, you know, wouldn't that be nice? There is a limited number of places people can go and things that they can do, and I don't think that Illinois was perceived so much as a state in play, but the larger issue, I think, is how these debates are framed, how these issues are framed. Do you want to have a middle class? A middle class is not a normal thing in a totally free economy. It's not a normal thing. Before the Wagner Act allowed the creation of unionization in the United States, there was not a middle class. The agricultural middle class began to disappear essentially after the Civil War in the early 1870s, with the rise of the railroads and the railroads allowing big agricultural combines to basically wipe out small farmers. And that led to, in the 1870s and the 1880s, the Grange Movement, which was the farmers, which was the middle class of America at that time, the small family farm, rising up and trying to gain some political power because they were being wiped out by huge corporations. And from the 1870s up until the 1930s, basically, there wasn't a middle class in America. The average wage in today's dollars was between $7,000 and $10,000 during most of that period of time. And so you had a lot of terrified workers, and it was the union movement in the 1930s, 1935, the Wagner Act, allowed unionization. And by 1947, when Taft-Hartley came along and allowed states to opt out, you had 70% of Americans could raise a family on a single salary because of the union movement. And now you've got this down to, what, 7% of the private workforce is unionized? And sure enough, ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor and on the middle class, we've seen the steady erosion of people's wages. These are the issues, in my opinion, that we should be talking about as values issues that the Democratic Party needs to reclaim. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard.
You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
A university taps the deep waters of a nearby lake to keep its campus cool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cornell University is a major research institution that's located near Cayuga Lake, one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Cornell uses a lot of energy for air conditioning during the summer, and a few engineers found a creative way to use Cayuga Lake to cool off the campus. Lanny Joyce is an engineer at Cornell's Utilities Department, and he helped develop the university's Lake Source Cooling Project. He says Cayuga Lake is so deep that only part of it warms up in the summer. Joyce says there's a layer of frigid water at the bottom of the lake all year long, and the university is using it to cool pipes that provide air conditioning to the campus.
We're saving 87% of the electricity of doing cooling the conventional way, which makes an annual electric use reduction in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. So it's a significant savings in electricity use, and something that's a huge benefit to the global environment by not having to generate that electricity in some regional power plant.
The university performed environmental assessments before and after pipes were laid for the cooling system. Some people worried that the lake might warm up because the water that comes back from campus is warmer than when it was pumped out. Joyce says that's not an issue.
The amount of heat turns out in reality to be the equivalent of about 2 hours of additional sunlight over the course of a year.
Cornell's system went into operation 4 years ago. The city of Toronto recently built a modified version of the Cornell system, and it's now using water from the depths of Lake Ontario to cool 100 office buildings downtown. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I've been afraid of changing, 'cause
and welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got a couple of callers here. Let's try and move along fairly quickly. Aaron in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Aaron, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
What's up?
I just want to say how Bush is he's in favor of big business. He's in favor of these big corporations, and I believe that with these big corporations, people are going to realize that things are bad, and they're going to want to move towards a more socialist and maybe even a communist society, and then that'll just defeat the whole purpose of Bush in his religiosity.
Yeah, and we're going to become like the Soviet Union, and it's going to be just wonderful. I don't think so. You know, the Soviet Union didn't work. I'm sorry. I visited that place back when it was the Soviet Union. I've also been in East Germany, and communism doesn't work. Doesn't work. We just that's not the direction to move. But there is an appropriate, it is absolutely appropriate to say, if you're going to play the game of business, and it's just a game, it's a game where you keep track of, you keep score by how much money have you made. If you're going to play the game of business, then first and foremost, you have to play it in a way that somehow benefits society. And that, at the very least, would mean paying a livable wage or allowing people to organize. Woody in South Burlington, Vermont on the line. Hey, Woody, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I got to admit, and this is tough to do in this state, but I'm a Republican.
Good on you.
And this is tough when we have. I'm sorry.
I said that's great. I'm all in favor of there being Republicans. I think that if we don't have, a dialogue in a nation, if you have single party rule, you've got Stalinism. It's not a good thing. We need debate.
Well, the tough part for me is having what equates to kind of the three blind mice in Washington. So I don't feel like my voice is ever heard down there between. Turncoat Jeffords, Socialist Sanders, and Filibuster Leahy. But one thing that I drew from this whole election was, and I mentioned to your call screener, from a Democratic standpoint, John Kerry changed positions more than somebody goes to the bathroom on Ex-Lax. I mean, he just had no stance.
Yeah, and George Bush never did. I don't want to re-debate the. I appreciate your call, Woody. I really do, but I don't want to re-debate the election that just happened. David in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Hi. I believe that whatever a problem is, it has some sort of a core truth that often we get hung up on the perimeters of it and those things that are sort of glamorous, and we don't get down to the truth. And I think it's interesting that two of the main issues that keep coming up, that of course Republicans kept bringing up, was about gay marriage and abortion.
Yeah, and these are the wedge issues, and they are issues that we should have a national discourse about, but shouldn't be politicized. David, I'm sorry we're out of time here. I appreciate your comments, though. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, News Without Conflicts of Global Corporate Interest, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin taxpayers are picking up the tab for health care when it comes to Walmart employees. According to a recent report by the Capital Times, 3,766 employees, spouses, and children are receiving health insurance from the state. The nation's largest employer has more than 25,000 employees in Wisconsin who average just over $10 per hour. The annual cost to taxpayers who are picking up the health care bill, $4.75 million. The story echoes a report released by UC Berkeley in August that found California taxpayers paid more than $86 million to cover Walmart employees enrolled in the state's health insurance and other social programs.
UAW workers, more than 600 of them, walked off their jobs Wednesday at four CNH Global NV plants in Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. The workers are striking because they have no contract after the company put up a final offer demanding concessions. A six-year contract ran out in May, and the UAW has been unable to reach an agreement on a new contract with CNH Global NV. 350 of the striking workers are in Racine, Wisconsin, 225 in Burlington, Iowa. The rest are in Minnesota and Illinois. The company makes tractors and backhoes and similar farm and construction equipment. The UAW recommended a no vote on the company's final contract offer, saying the offer takes back 40 years' worth of gains in areas like health care costs and new higher wages. The company says that workers gave notice around 10 a.m., walked off their jobs around noon on Wednesday, and workers are picketing around the clock at those four plants.
If the House of Mouse doesn't come up with an extra slice of cheese, Mickey may be walking off the job. For the first time since the early 80s, workers at Disney World Resorts are considering a strike. According to the Services Trade Council, a group of six unions that represent more than 40% of the resort's workers, Disney executives are refusing to propose a reasonable offer for pay raises and health and retirement benefits. Disney says that the offers that have been made so far are fair and competitive. The two sides have been trying to negotiate for nearly 8 months. Union members are expected to vote down a recent proposal, and if so, the council believes that would give them the authority to call for a strike in the Magic Kingdom.
Union households accounted for 27 million voters this year, and 68% of those union voters cast their ballots for John Kerry in the battleground states. That's according to an independent election survey and exit polling done by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. Here's today's Dow Bob report. More than 5,500 workers were killed on the job in 2003. A total of 5,559 were officially recorded. That's an increase over workplace fatalities in 2002. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there were 4 deaths for every 100,000 workers. The 3 most common causes of workplace deaths are highway accidents, homicides, and falls. The census of fatal occupational injuries has been conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1992. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in? Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we? In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places. Money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament?
How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, with U.S. forces near Fallujah, Iraq. Tom Lasseter with the Knight Ritter Tribune News Service files this report. Military hospital preparing for Fallujah battle. Most Bush voters thinking that the war in Iraq is vengeance for 9/11, of course. So many of the American people getting ready, just bracing. The military families in the United States have just got to be in agony. The number of dead and wounded from the expected battle to retake insurgent-controlled Fallujah probably will reach levels not seen since Vietnam, a senior surgeon at the Marine camp outside Fallujah said Thursday. Navy Commander Locke Noyes said the camp's hospital is preparing to handle 25 severely injured soldiers a day, not counting walking wounded and the dead. The hospital has added two operating rooms, doubled its supplies, added a mortuary, and stocked up on blood reserves. Doctors have set up a system of ambulance vehicles that will rush to the camp's gate to receive the dead and wounded so units can return to battle quickly. At the same time, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has warned leaders, this story from the Los Angeles Times by Maggie Farley, has warned leaders of the United States, Britain, and Iraq that another full-scale assault on the rebel-held city of Fallujah would further alienate Iraqis and disrupt elections planned for January. Apparently, Annan sent this warning in a letter on Sunday. And so you've got now the head of the United Nations saying, please don't do it. You got the Bush getting ready for it. You got Blair, you know, kind of going down the middle. What's going to happen? It's going to be a tough time. This is going to be a very, very, very painful experience for us. And it didn't have to happen. It didn't have to happen. Saddam Hussein in Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11 whatsoever and represented no threat to the United States or even to their neighbors. They were obnoxious. The guy was a tin horn dictator. There's plenty of those in the world. But he had the misfortune, I suppose, of sitting on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves, as Dick Cheney so likes to remind us. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to get some thoughts off your chest or, you know, out of your head or whatever today. It's the last day of the week of the election. Some processing and decompressing to do if you're not sitting in a bar. And so feel free to call in. Any topic you want to talk about Friday afternoon here, 1-866-889-8894. Ann is in Sarasota, Florida. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi. On the election, real quick, I really, truly believe we got screwed on that one, that there's so many stories I'm seeing on vote fraud that happened on the Internet that we need to bring that Internet information to the mainstream. Everybody needs to, in their own hometown newspapers, whatever, to get that out, because that needs to be looked into, definitely, or we're never going to have a chance to take back this country from the right-wing whatever they are. I'll try to be polite today.
Yeah. Well, you know, the bottom line is, Ann, one of the things that this is what really scares me. One of the things that we learned, and I, you know, I agree with you on this, but I think it goes even deeper than that. One of the things that we learned about the people who are running the Republican machine in this election cycle is that they are willing to countenance lies in order to accomplish their goals. That is, they believe the old Machiavellian notion that the ends justify the means. They think that having single-party Republican rule is such an important thing so that they can get their agenda through. And they truly believe this, I think.
If I can interrupt you for just a second.
Sure.
Because it's very important to me. Fallujah, I've been watching on TV, you know, they're getting ready to go in, and basically what they're going to do is slaughter. There's no other word for it. A lot of innocent women, children, elderly, they're going to slaughter them. And they're so-called routing out insurgents, which, by the way, MSNBC slipped and called what they really are, rebels. They're rebelling against the United States.
Yeah, and I think the insurgents have mostly already left. But let me just finish this earlier point, because it gets back to what you were saying, and I think it's an important one. If these folks are willing, if you have a group of people in power who are willing to lie or willing to use any means to accomplish an end, then would they be not willing to use, for example, rigged voting machines? And
I agree.
You know, and that's the thing. I mean, if the Republicans had run an honorable campaign, if they had not embraced the swift vote lies, if they had not actually used lies in their own ads, then I would be sitting here saying, you know, I really don't think that these people would approve of rigging voting machines. But that's not what happened. And so, you know, I'm not yet ready to fully embrace the conspiracy lobby. I really want to see the evidence, and I think that we have some really good investigative reporters out there and bloggers and whatnot, you know, who are uncovering things every day. I opened this program in the first hour with the startling numbers that you can find in the small counties in Florida. And, in fact, there's a link of, if you go to TomHartmann.com and go to the message boards and go to the politics section, there's a link to that website that has those numbers. And they broke down every single county in Florida. And what you find is that in all of the smaller counties, the votes were apparently flipped. You know, anybody?
I saw that.
Yeah. I'm assuming that these are real numbers, and you know that maybe there really was a theft here, and I think that that's the if that's the case, it's not just a crime, it's a tragedy, and it speaks to the, you know, sadly, unfortunately, to the idea that, of power is more important than truth.
What I wanted to go back to the Iraq thing real quick about Fallujah. It really disturbs me that all these evangelical Christians that are so worried about abortion aren't worried about what's going to happen to all those innocent people. Not and besides that, all our soldiers that are going in there, when they shouldn't even be fighting over there. I mean, for one, but for two, I thought since Saddam is captured and there's no weapons of mass destruction, what are they doing fighting? What are they doing? They're keeping those people from taking their country the direction they want to go, which is what freedom is supposed to be. And I'm real concerned about these evangelical types, because what I'm seeing is that they think they have a basis of power now in Bush. What's to prevent them from calling us insurgents, rebels, and labeling us and coming after us? It sounds crazy, but no more crazier than what they're already doing.
Well, it's happened before in the United States. I mean, before the Revolutionary War, there were entire theocracies, mostly in Massachusetts, but up and down the East Coast. But then also John Adams, you know, pushed through the Alien and Sedition Acts and started throwing into jail anybody who spoke out against him. There was a guy sitting in a tavern in Delaware, when John Adams and his wife came through in their carriage, and Adams required that, actually it was his wife's idea, that whenever they came through a town, that the local militia had to come out and shoot cannons, and somebody had to say, all hail John, you know, President John Adams, may he live long. And there was a Luther, what was Luther's last name? There's a guy named Luther who was sitting in a tavern in this town in Delaware as Adams went by, and he says, oh, they're firing the cannons. I don't care if they fire them at his arse. And the tavern owner was a good Federalist, and he turned good Luther Baldwin was the guy's name, turned old Luther in, and Luther spent the next 2 years in prison for speaking ill of the president.
Well, I've had somebody, this is what really gets me alarmed, is there's someone I know that is an evangelical Christian, a really nice family. I've known them for almost 3 years. We've been friends. We stay in touch. And she sent me this big email about voting for Bush on Election Day, and I emailed back, please don't send me that. I don't believe in Bush, and I will not elect him, you know, support him for president. She cut me off dead. She sent me a nasty email back, says, I don't want anything to do with you. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me. It's this intolerance. I mean, these people are extremely intolerant.
Well, I would say that person is probably a member of a cult. And there are cults all over the place, not just the Moonies who run the Washington Times, but within Christianity as well. But I think it's really important that we be reaching out to evangelicals and that we reach out to them with their own Bible. You know, point them to Matthew 24 and talk about these issues. We are violating the principles, the tenets of Christianity in what we're doing in Iraq and in many of these other issues, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah. And thanks for the call. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Doug in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I was watching CNN for the tallies when they were on election night, and one of the headlines for one of their articles said that the Federal Reserve was about ready to take out the largest loan in U.S. history. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. It's Congress. We talked about this yesterday on the air, and I believe it was the first hour of the program. Congress, we exceeded our debt ceiling, actually, on October 14th. And so technically, at that point, the government was bankrupt. And Congress is going to have to come back into session in the next 2 weeks and raise the debt ceiling to allow Bush to borrow more money from our grandchildren to do the things that he wants to do, give more tax cuts to his buddies. And I'm guessing that's what that was about. The Federal Reserve itself doesn't borrow money. What it does is it acts as the agent for you and me borrowing money. Or at least the government on behalf of us borrowing money to maintain government functions if our tax revenues don't match the expenditures. So we have, you know, these borrow and spend conservatives in Congress.
Who are we borrowing the money from?
We're borrowing it from anybody who will buy our IOUs. Our IOUs are called Treasury bonds and Treasury bills. And,
right, so basically
and,
China again?
Well, about a third of them are held in the United States. About a third of them are held in China and Asia, and about a third of them are held in the Middle East and Europe, more or less, as I recall. So it's spread around, but basically that's it. Yeah, and that's one of the things that the Fed does. I believe, you know, the Treasury Department certainly does that. I think that the Fed's involved in that. So, Doug, thanks for the call. Go ahead. You had another question?
Well, I was just wondering what the interest rate for my grandkids, if I did have some, would be, and what the totals for them to repay back these loans would be.
Well, this is one of the big issues, because Greenspan has been holding down interest rates artificially. And so, for example, this year we only had to pay $160 billion in interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up back in the 1980s to make the economy look good so he could get himself reelected. And, mm-hmm. Bush's father elected, and then the bill came due, you know, in the next generation with Carter.
Right.
But that $160 billion that we paid in interest this year, had interest rates been where they were 4 years ago, would have been $300 billion. You know, so the amount that our children are paying right now, our debt is around $7 trillion, but it's probably going to take around $14 or $15 trillion to pay that back. It might take even twice that, depending on how interest rates go over the next 20, 30 years. Yeah, no, it's absolutely mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. There has been this administration has been the most fiscally irresponsible in the history of the United States, and the strategy has been what they call the Star of the Beast strategy, which is just run the government into debt so badly that you have no choice but to say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't have Medicare anymore, we can't have Social Security anymore, we've got to put it in the hands of the private corporations, we can't have social safety net, it's just not appropriate, we can't afford it anymore. That's their plan. Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done?
I will be. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. The 2004 election outcome. Money wins, turns out. Gee, what a surprise. This is something else we need to fix. I mean, it's we have a lot of challenges that we're facing here in the United States, and they're challenges that we can rise to. We have before. We have faced terrible, terrible times in this country. We've been through a civil war. We've been through several Great Depressions. We've been through the wiping out of the middle class during the Gilded Age. We've been through times when anybody who dared talk about organizing labor was shot. We have been through times that make today look like a picnic. And the challenges that we're facing today, we're going to get through these things. And one of the challenges that we have is getting money out of politics, frankly. The winners of a handful of congressional races are still unknown, but one thing is certain. Money won big in the 2004 elections, this in the Center for Responsive Politics. In 96% of House races and 91% of Senate races that have been decided by midday today, this is from a news release dated November 4th, yesterday, the candidate who spent the most money won, according to a post-election analysis by the nonpartisan Center for Responsive Politics. The biggest spender was victorious in 413 of 432 decided House races and 31 of 34 decided Senate races. I suppose the good news is that there were a number of people who spent a lot of money and didn't win. Not a lot of them, but there were a few. step by step. That has to be our mantra. We must, one at a time, take these issues, focus on them, and move forward. Yeah, getting money out of politics, getting corporations, out of our vote, out of our voting machines, and taking back the commons, reclaiming our country. We must. 1-8-6, and this really is the soul of most Americans. I think so many Americans missed the real issues in this election. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Chris in Abiquiu, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Good. I agree with you absolutely. The way I look at politics is you fight as hard as you can for what you deeply believe in, and the next day, win or lose, you fight even harder. That's just the way you go about it. I keep hearing talk about how maybe we got jobbed on the vote. Maybe it was somehow the vote was manufactured, and I admit the possibility. But just looking at it from a broad view, that would show a level of sophistication and sheer competence that these people have not shown to at all. I don't think they could find their fannies with a flashlight. Perhaps they could have jobbed the votes, but either way, I don't think we're going to be able to prove it for at least the next 4 years. Yeah. Had that happened.
What concerns me, Chris, is that what if the Republican Party had nothing to? Let's say the vote was stolen. Just for the sake of argument, in Florida, let's say that those numbers that you can see, where you see that in any county that had fewer than 60,000 people, I think that was the threshold, that the optical scan machines caused the outcome to be reversed.
Yeah.
And let's say that that's real and that really happened. What if the Republican Party had nothing to do with that whatsoever? What if it was just some overzealous hacker? What if it was just some guy? I mean, what if it was somebody like, people who write viruses?
Well, absolutely, and that's a form of terrorism, and work has to be done on that as well. As far as the outcome is concerned, as you've pointed out, there's something to be said for George W. Bush having to clean up his own mess. Unfortunately, I don't think he's going to. Fallujah is going to be an absolute bloody disaster on all sides, and we're not going to have any real elections
in
January.
We're in a Vietnam situation here. And what people have to keep in mind is that Fallujah is one of 29 towns that we've lost now.
Yeah. And just drive on. We'll keep fighting the good fight. It's what Americans do as long as we can. And when I'm gone, my kids will fight for me.
And always have. Chris, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Always good to hear your optimistic voice. It's you are what you eat, they say. So I encourage you to look for the positive things. We're still alive. We still have an economy. We still have a nation. Most of our institutions are still intact. There's a lot we can do in this country. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin taxpayers are picking up the tab for health care when it comes to Walmart employees. According to a recent report by the Capital Times, 3,766 employees, spouses, and children are receiving health insurance from the state. The nation's largest employer has more than 25,000 employees in Wisconsin who average just over $10 per hour. The annual cost to taxpayers who are picking up the health care bill, $4.75 million. The story echoes a report released by UC Berkeley in August that found California taxpayers paid more than $86 million to cover Walmart employees enrolled in the state's health insurance and other social programs.
UAW workers, more than 600 of them, walked off their jobs Wednesday at four CNH Global ND plants in Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. The workers are striking because they have no contract after the company put up a final offer demanding concessions. A six-year contract ran out in May, and the UAW has been unable to reach an agreement on a new contract with CNH Global ND. 350 of the striking workers are in Racine, Wisconsin, 225 in Burlington, Iowa. The rest are in Minnesota and Illinois. The company makes tractors and backhoes and similar farm and construction equipment. The UAW recommended a no vote on the company's final contract offer, saying the offer takes back 40 years worth of gains in areas like health care costs and new higher wages. The company says that workers gave notice around 10 a.m., walked off their jobs around noon on Wednesday, and workers are picketing around the clock at those four plants.
If the House of Mouse doesn't come up with an extra slice of cheese, Mickey may be walking off the job. For the first time since the early 80s, workers at Disney World Resorts are considering a strike. According to the Services Trade Council, a group of six unions that represent more than 40% of the resort's workers, Disney executives are refusing to propose a reasonable offer for pay raises and health and retirement benefits. Disney says that the offers that have been made so far are fair and competitive. The two sides have been trying to negotiate for nearly 8 months. Union members are expected to vote down a recent proposal, and if so, the council believes that would give them the authority to call for a strike in the Magic Kingdom.
Union households accounted for 27 million voters this year, and 68% of those union voters cast their ballots for John Kerry in the battleground states. That's according to an independent election survey and exit polling done by Peter D. Hart Research Associates. Here's today's Dal Bob report. More than 5,500 workers were killed on the job in 2003. A total of 5,559 were officially recorded. That's an increase over workplace fatalities in 2002. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says there were four deaths for every 100,000 workers. The three most common causes of workplace deaths are highway accidents, homicides, and falls. The census of fatal occupational injuries has been conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics since 1992. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Still here, still kicking, still alive, still liberal, progressive. Call it what you want. I believe in America. I believe in fairness. I believe in investing in my nation. I agree with Albert Einstein, who, our quote for the day, said, "The world is a dangerous place to live, not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who don't do anything about it." And I fully intend to be one of those people who do something about it. My contribution is this program, or at least my public contribution. Your contribution can be your activity, your actions. Get out there, participate, join one of the political parties, get active, write letters to the editor, join. There are a lot of great groups out there. ReclaimDemocracy.org is one of my favorites. They're starting local chapters all over the United States. Jeff Milchen runs that thing. You can hook up with them. This is completely separate from partisan politics. And let's look forward. Let's look at the things that can be done. We need to look at situations. We need to look at problems as situations needing solutions, not opportunities to thrash ourselves or fall into despair. It's just really that simple. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Bill in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Yeah, greetings, fellow banana Republicans.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So the term progressive is used extensively, and I think inaccurately. I heard one of the lead guys from MoveOn call John Kerry a progressive, and almost fell out of my chair. So I think it's a term that really needs to be nailed down. You know, if a candidate calls himself or herself progressive, then I think they should be for universal health care.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and see, my suspicion was that if Kerry had become president, and certainly if he had taken the House and Senate, if he had been able to pull off what Roosevelt did in 32, that he would have gone for single-payer health care, because it really is the only rational way to do it. It's the only inexpensive way to do it. But he couldn't come out and say that.
Yeah, it's just become a buzzword that doesn't mean anything these days.
Yeah.
You know,
you mean progressive?
Yeah, it's a term that everybody wants to use, but... You know, it's a slippery term that, you know, just not nailed down.
So what's your litmus test, Bill? You've got universal health care. What else?
Yeah, I'd say clean elections.
Clean elections. Okay. Now, why would a conservative not be in favor of that either?
That's a good point. Yeah, they went for it in Arizona, didn't they?
I mean, how do you differentiate? If you're going to differentiate, you know, it's... In favor of gay marriage? I mean, I see. This is where this needs to be reframed. I'd say in favor of civil rights.
Favor of civil rights.
I think, you know, progressives are absolutely in favor of civil rights and in favor of the idea that the government has no business telling us what we can do or how we conduct our private lives. Now, oddly enough, back in 1964, when I was 13 years old and went door to door for Barry Goldwater, that's what. And I called myself a conservative at that time. That was one of our principal issues, was, you know, the government shouldn't be in our lives. Barry Goldwater, in his last days, was going on and on about how, you know, it's silly that the government is criminalizing drugs and trying to criminalize, you know, sexual behavior and things. So, you know, it's so odd to me how these labels have changed. I think that when you get right down to it, underneath it, and you get below labels like progressive and conservative, you discover that there is a core set of values that are really actually fundamentally American. And they have been American for 200 years. And really, you could argue, you could go back to Greek times, or you could go back to Native American communities, and you could say even that they're egalitarian values, that they're human values. That they're the values of, you know, what Thomas Jefferson referred to in the Declaration of Independence, nature's God, you know, that they're in our DNA. They're burned into us, and they're the values of fair play, the values of honesty, the values of a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. In other words, if we don't take care of the weakest among us, it's going to harm all of us. We don't just do it because Jesus said that's the only way you can get into heaven. We do it because it's the right thing to do for our society, because it makes it a better world for all of us. I have lived and worked in the third world, in places where when you walk outside your door, you're mobbed by you know, runny-nosed kids with open sores and tuberculosis begging for money. And or for food, for that matter. And that's not the kind of nation, that's not, frankly, the kind of world that I think any of us want to live in. And yet, that is the direction that many of the so-called conservative economic policies are taking us. They're taking us into this world of, you know, this destroying the middle class and creating a huge class of working poor in poverty. And I would have to say that the progressive values, in my opinion, are just these very, very straightforward, bedrock American traditional values of we believe in fairness. So somebody says, are you in favor of gay marriage? You say, I'm in favor of civil rights for everyone, and I'm in favor of the government having no say over who I want to marry, you know, as long as they're of the age of consent. And, you know, how can a conservative argue against that? For example.
Well said, Tom.
I think we just need to reframe these things. We need to take back, you know, the control of the language.
Yeah, and I got to disagree with you a little bit, too. I usually agree with you, and I really appreciate your show, and I've been reading your books. But you said something today that we should get over the election, and I agree that, you know, we should be doing things that improve our lives and getting involved in politics more, because we've seen what happens when we don't get involved. But, you know, after the 2000 election, Secretary of State of Florida, Catherine Harris, said to get over it, meaning to get over the stolen election. And investigative reporter Greg Pallas said that in response to that, that he wants to get back to democracy. And I'll never, ever forget that, that the 2000 election was definitely stolen. And, you know, the information is still coming out about this one, but it looks like it was stolen also.
You know, Bill, I agree with you, and I think that there and the good thing I think about this time around is that we've been warned, right? We, you know, we had Greg Pallas doing that research, and we've seen the situation. And if there actually was fraud, if this election was stolen, and if it can be proven, and I am confident that if it happened, it's going to be uncovered because there's an army of people out there working to find out right now. If that's the case, then, you know, George Bush may have a huge surprise come, you know, before January 1st. And in fact, then John Kerry conceding right now was the very best possible strategy if a week from now or 3 weeks from now it comes out that, in fact, Kerry won and the election was stolen. That, you know, nobody's going to accuse him of having been the sore loser who fought this through the courts and finally won in the courts. Instead, it's going to be, oh, look at the Republicans committed a crime. And if they did, they need to be nailed to the wall. And if they didn't, we need to establish that as well and move on.
Yeah, but it was reported on Democracy Now! That Kerry won the poll after the vote,
the exit poll, yeah,
in Florida and Ohio.
Oh, sure, and several other states that end up going to Bush. Yeah, absolutely. I know. I was doing reporting election eve, and this is, as I said, this is something that we have to dig into, and we have to pull this stuff out to the surface and find out what the truth is. But in the meantime, let's not be in despair about it, and let's not go over the edge into absolute assertions of conspiracy theory, because I think that that's going to harm our credibility with the average American. I think it's more important to say, hey, there's serious questions here that are being raised. Let's investigate these, rather than saying, yeah, this election was stolen, damn it. You know, I really think that we need to take, even if we believe it was stolen, until we have the evidence, we have to take a very rational posture on this. And then, again, there's this larger issue, which is the one I wrote about on Common Dreams yesterday, and that is, what are we doing allowing corporations to handle our vote in the first place? What are they doing in there? Why did we create a situation, why did we allow the Republicans to create the situation with the Help America Vote Act in 2002 where we gave billions of dollars to the states to give to these private corporations to bring them into the voting process? That's the violation of democracy in my mind, as well as the possibility that the elections are stolen. Both need to be rectified, and we can't allow the possibility of a stolen election to cause us to forget about the fact that the larger crime, frankly, in my opinion, you know, presidents come and go, but, you know, over time the republic lasts. The larger crime is the stealing of the commons. That is the handing of the commons of our nation itself, our vote, the enfranchisement system of our nation, our vote, over to private interests that say that they're not accountable to we. They're only accountable to our stockholders. They're not accountable to we the people. That's the real problem.
Right on, Tom.
Bill, thanks for the call. I appreciate hearing from you. It's good to hear from you. Martha in Lowell, Massachusetts is on the line. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. It's been a tough week, and it's all uphill from here. That sounds wrong. It's all onward and upward from here.
Onward, Christian soldiers.
There you go. Yeah.
Listen, I want to thank you for your program. Thank heaven I finally found you. I was trying on my portable radio, and I couldn't get it. I finally got you on the Internet.
Yeah, we have a number of web listeners, yeah.
But what I wanted to say is I think another big, big problem is educating the public. Now, I live in what they call Kerry's hometown, which it wasn't really ran for office here, and he did live here for a while.
Yeah.
But anyways, I live in public housing, subsidized housing, and I just naturally assumed all my neighbors were going to vote for Senator Kerry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was questioning some of my neighbors, like, oh, I assume you voted for Bush, and they said, yeah. And, but when I mentioned, you know, the Bill of Rights and civil liberties, civil rights. Now, you know what they thought civil rights was? Was for equality for blacks. End of story, period.
Yeah.
And other words that I didn't understand myself, and I really kind of got into the election, and I started looking on the Internet, looking up words and what are they talking about, and that's how I found out about the violation to the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
Now, most people, the average person, isn't paying attention, which I admit I wasn't either in the beginning.
Yeah.
And...
Well, our civil rights are just being, I mean, this is the problem with the Patriot Act, I assume is what you're talking about, Martha.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It's absolutely a very real problem. But I'm amazed that folks who are living in public housing, which is subsidized by the tax dollars of everybody else, and again, I'm in favor of that within certain reasonable bounds, because I think that, you know, if you want people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, you got to make sure they have bootstraps. You know, people have to have a starting point in life, and that people who are living in public housing would vote for George Bush, whose overt economic policy is to end public housing.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, that just boggles my mind. It just boggles
me
my
too.
Mind.
I walked away pulling my hair out of my head. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Well, I hope you pointed that out to some of them. You know,
excuse me.
Yeah, because people need to learn to vote their pocketbook. That's the Republicans were so successful this year, whether they won or lost the election, another issue, but they were so successful at causing people to vote against their own pocketbooks because they were either afraid that some terrorist was going to drop a bomb on a little city in the middle of Iowa, or they were afraid that two guys were going to be kissing. You know, I mean, the Republicans peddled fear so effectively that they caused people to forget about their own economic survival issues. Martha, thanks for the call and for making that point. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Michael in Atlanta, Georgia, on the line. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. It's good to hear your voice again after this, you know, the dark day we had on Tuesday. You've been quite a light for us progressives, cheering us up with your positive attitude, which I greatly appreciate.
Michael, frankly, I don't see any alternative. I mean, we can lay in the dirt and beat ourselves over the head, or we can stand up, dust ourselves off, and keep walking. And to do anything less than that latter, I think, is to leave behind the principles that we've been fighting for.
I agree totally, but it does help to have the support of someone as eloquent as yourself on the radio.
Well, thank you.
I have a comment I'd like to make. You were talking about the possibility of voting fraud, and I worked extensively in the North Carolina campaign in Asheville the last couple of weeks of the election, and I can tell you that there's something that's not quite on the level. I mean, I saw a lot of early numbers where there were some polls, local polls, and taken in North Carolina by, you know, various TV stations.
You're talking about exit polls?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about polls prior to the election, actually, and then polls after, early on in the election.
Right.
As well. But in all the early polls before the election, we had them in a statistical dead heat.
Yeah.
Right up till the day of the election. I mean, it was like 2 points off, maybe Kerry 47, Bush 49, something like that. And it was like that right through until basically those voting machines came on. Because all the early voting, all the absentee ballots were counted first, obviously. And right through that, it was still within 2 percentage points. And then, you know, as soon as you know, the regular voting started and we started getting some results in from, you know, the actual election day voting, suddenly it just started to swing, and Bush won by like 7 points. Now, a lot of people didn't think that that Kerry would win North Carolina anyway, and that's probably true, but we thought we had a shot, and we tried for it because the polls looked good, and then it just turned out to be much more decisive than...
Yeah, now, you know, it could have been the Bin Laden tape. It could have been the very effective advertising, those wolf ads, you know, peddling fear, the checklist ads that had hypnotic suggestions embedded into them that the Republicans were running very, very heavily in the last 2 weeks. Or, like you say, it could have been the voting machines. We need to find out. We need to get to the bottom of this and close this door on this chapter of our history, in my opinion. Thank you, Michael, for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate
Thank you.
It. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least a million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand, and that's good for all of us.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Gotta fight another fight. Gotta run another night. Get up, check it out. I'm on my way and it don't feel right.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, and Mike in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm, of course, among the very disappointed people. But this whole thing of the vote, you know, I don't. I'm sort of like it's really meaningless to me at this point. You know, whether it was, you know, the leaders that have gotten us the most results were never elected. Martin Luther King was never elected. Gandhi was never elected.
You know, that's a great point, Mike. Great point.
We're just standing on this. We're hanging on to this little lottery vote, and it's like hoping to win some sort of justice.
Yeah, yeah.
And the vote isn't enough to do it.
No, it's us. It's you and me.
It's us. And I'm afraid. I hate to say that the resistance to this conservative fascist government is pusillanimous.
How so?
Well, I mean, I am a little disappointed in Kerry's quick, concession.
Yeah.
I mean, for whatever reason that is, but I mean, he basically left a constituency of 5 million people. Okay, now what do we do?
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. It's
Martin Luther King. It wouldn't have made any difference what the vote was.
Yeah, and that's why I think that what is going to emerge out of this, and what I am sensing emerging out of this, is a new progressive consensus, a new movement, as it were.
We need an unelected. We need someone with a voice, someone who's eloquent. I mean, I don't know what makes a Gandhi, what makes a Martin Luther King, what creates
a passionate belief and
I don't think the progressives have that.
Oh, I think we do. I think
well,
we do.
Well, I mean, it's certainly not showing.
Well, I think the people who are running the progressive websites, White Rose Society, CommonDreams.org, Op-Ed News.
They're preaching to the choir. I mean, nobody's standing really at the front line here and saying, look.
Well, we have to.
Is wrong.
Yeah. See, step one is we've got to define the front line. I think that for the last year, a lot of us have been diverted into partisan politics, and we've been getting into bed with the Democrats and thinking
the Democrats
that this
are pusillanimous.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And thinking that this is the solution to everything, and it hasn't worked. So step two, and that'll be next week. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks to Louise for engineering for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Ben Birch for our archives at White Rose Society, to Brad Walrod for our music, to the folks in our chat room who showed up, to Jay for our theme music, and to you for listening. Happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The last liberal outlaw, a new American revolution, is happening